Hello and welcome to Disney Magic Hour, episode number 156. On this week's show, we are going to give our top three Disney films of 2018. To my left, as always, is Melissa. Say hello, Melissa.
Hello, Melissa.
From the Main Street Gazette is Ryan Wilson. Say hello, Ryan.
Hello, Ryan.
And also joining us, as always, is Courtney Van Ren. Say hello, Courtney.
Hello, Courtney.
Hello, Pete. This episode of Disney Magic Hour is brought to you by MEI Travel for all your vacation planning needs, for visiting Walt Disney World, taking a cruise, traveling anywhere around the globe in the upcoming 2019. Visit the experts over at MEI-travel.com, where Becky and her team can get you started on your own adventure. Our site is lastgenpodcast.com. You can find us on Twitter at Diz Magic Hour Pod. That's D-I-S Magic Hour Pod. On Facebook, if you look for Disney Magic Hour, you can add yourself to the group or add your friends if you're already there. You can find this show on iTunes, Google Play Music, and Stitcher. And Melissa, where are the pictures and the Patreons?
On Instagram, we're at Disney Magic Hour Podcast. And if you head over to patreon.com/DisneyMagicHour, you'll find ways to support the show there.
And Ryan, where can everyone find everything you do for the Main Street Gazette?
It's at mainstgazette.com is the main site. If you're looking for us on Instagram or Twitter, it's mainstgazette. And if you're looking for us on Facebook, search for Main Street Gazette and you'll find the page.
All right, guys. Welcome back, everyone. How's everyone doing?
Good. Excellent.
So we haven't, you guys weren't here last week, 2 weeks ago. How's how that works now. And Ryan, you were on vacation.
Yep.
You're on big
boat? I was on a big boat somewhere in the Bahamas.
Do you have a good time? Which boat were you on again? I forgot.
This was the Dream. We were on the Dream for a 4-day and then spent the weekend at Hilton Head. So we did a land-sea kind of thing differently.
Hilton Head. So we went to Hilton Head also.
I saw that.
So you really like Hilton Head a lot, right?
I do.
What are the things about Hilton Head that pull you in at that particular property?
So for me, it's an actual like vacation, because when I go to Disney, I'm always digging into things. I'm researching. I'm photographing. There's 25 things I'm doing besides relaxing. And at Hilton Head, I can literally sit on my porch overlooking the marsh and read a book, or I can go play a round of mini golf. I don't have to feel like I have something else to do. It's really just relaxing and going with the flow.
And Melissa, you had a good time, yes?
Yeah, just to clarify, we went to the DVC Hilton Head Resort, which is the one that Ryan's also talking about. Yep. But, you know, it's technically a Disney vacation. I'm sorry, what was the question?
What did you like about it?
Oh, about Hilton Head. Sorry, I wasn't paying attention. my mind wandered. It's early. I liked the same thing Ryan liked. I liked the relaxation part of it. I liked how you are like really immersed in, the woods, the marsh area. Like, you know, it was kind of like a wilderness type feel, you know, wilderness lodge type feel. It was very, very quiet, which was also really cool. And, I liked all the little like things they had around the resort, like the bocce ball or the, cornhole sets, you know, just like littered throughout the resort for your, you know, amusement.
All right, yeah, I had a good time. I think I'm more of an active vacation person, so going to a place where the goal is to do pretty much as little as possible is a little weird for me.
Yeah,
I didn't warm up to it very quickly, and I don't know. There is that weird smell. There was a weird smell. There was like a.
I don't know if it was the marsh or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know what it was.
It's the salt marsh.
Is that what it was? Okay, because yes. We were going to sleep a couple of nights, and I was like, "Do you smell that?" And I thought it was like a cesspool. and so then when I went out early in the morning, I only really went out early in the morning the day we left.
Yeah, the last day.
Because we wanted to get ahead of traffic and stuff, and I stepped outside and I was like, "Oh, that's that smell."
It might have been like low tide or something too, which might have been worse.
Yeah, that's possible. I don't know. I don't know nothing about nothings, but I'd go again with a group and stuff. It was nice.
Yeah, a group might be fun because then you could
It's Montauk. I mean, for us, it was Montauk. You know, for the Long Islander in us, that's what I was like. Oh, okay, I understand this whole concept. This is what this is.
Yeah, Montauk, so. The Hamptons, anything.
So now we got to give Vero. Yeah. Or Vero. Is it Vero or Vero?
Vero.
It's Vero. Okay. There we go.
You say Vero.
Yeah, I always say it wrong. I can't help it. Anyways, Courtney, how are you?
I'm so good.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'm excellent.
Good.
Yeah.
Are you ready to talk about your top three films of this past year?
I absolutely am.
Yeah, this is December 30th that we're recording this, just about the end of 2018, which is rather a hellscape of events for most folks in the world, but there's some pretty damn good movies that came out this year. Some not so good, some not so good. But we're going to talk about the ones that we enjoyed the most. But I'm going to give a little rundown of what did come out this year.
Good, because it's been a long year.
It has, because guess what the first movie of the year was? Black Panther, which honestly, that film feels like it. That feels like it came out like 2 years ago at least.
Yeah.
The idea that it just came out at the beginning of the year, I don't know. It's just weird to me mentally to put that together. So that was actually in February 9th, back in the beginning of the year. And it actually scores the highest Rotten Tomatoes score of every film that Disney would release for the rest of the year at a scorching 97. That's Pixar level as well. Good Pixar level is what that is.
That's surprising, actually.
Why?
That it's the highest. Not that it's that high, but that it's the highest.
Honestly? I don't know. I mean,
there's only like one or two others that I think could beat it.
We'll get into that later.
Yeah, no, that's interesting.
Wrinkle in Time then came in March, March 9th. Had a bit of an uneven release. It came out to very, very 50-50 reviews, which the movie itself is kind of also uneven in many ways. So that sort of all adds up. April was the money dropped from the sky as Avengers Infinity War cracked open, April 27th, and you know just to put this out, 84% on Rotten Tomatoes.
It was divisive.
I guess 84% on an Avengers film, on a big Marvel film, that is actually kind of divisive.
I know.
But it's also 84%. It's a lot. Like, if you got an 84 on a test, you'd be like, all right.
You know what's also really interesting? Because yes. I thought this when they announced Avengers Endgame. Those two movies were supposed to come out in May, both of them.
And they pushed both up.
I did not even realize that the first one was pushed to April, and now so is Endgame.
That's, yep. Yeah. Because May is a nightmare, as Solo, a Star Wars story, found out. This came out on May 25th between what was still Infinity War wave. We also had Deadpool 2 was coming out, I think, the week after or something like that, a week before.
Before, yeah. And then wasn't something else coming out, too?
There was a ton of stuff around that time. So I basically put this as the dumbest release date of the year. In my opinion, this is just idiotic nostalgia ruining the day once again. Because they released three films in this new era of Star Wars in December, and all of them made over $1 billion. There was zero reason to go back to May.
Yeah.
Especially when you look at what came out this December.
Well, I mean, their only argument...
Early December, specifically.
Yeah, their only argument could have been Mary Poppins, but... That's such two different crowds that I feel like it would have been fine.
Aquaman hasn't had any problem, splitting up that crowd and outperforming Mary Poppins.
Yeah.
So you look at the beginning of December, and December 5th, I honestly have no idea why that wasn't the release date for that. Because now next year, they're just going right back to December for the release dates. So,
yeah,
because
it's been December for the episodes and for Rogue One, right?
Yeah, the last three that they put out in the new era were all December. So
weird.
I think that you'll see them go back to their, we got to see what they announce at Celebration. What is coming out post episode 9? We'll find that out later. Incredibles 2 cracked out on June 15th. That actually has the second highest Rotten Tomatoes at 94%. We'll talk about that a bit later, though, I think. I think we'll get into that one a bit more. Ant-Man and the Wasp came out July 6th. To an 88% Rotten Tomatoes. Rotten Tomatoes is weird. Now, don't forget, Rotten Tomatoes, I could review a film like this. It's fine. And that's a positive review. So, you know, the 50-50 on thumbs up, thumbs down, you don't get any of the actual dialogue that comes with that thumbs up, thumbs down. And so, you know, just keep that in mind, because I don't know. Ant-Man and the Wasp, very, like, workmanlike. I don't remember anything about that movie except the Baba Yaga stuff.
Oh, I liked it.
I didn't say I didn't like it. I said I don't remember any of it.
Yeah, I think Ant-Man and even Black Panther, like, they did a good job of being independent Marvel films, which is very rare for Marvel films sometimes, so.
All right.
I appreciated it.
August 3rd, everyone cried.
Yes.
As Christopher Robin came out, and probably the most adorable thing all year.
Yes.
And then November 2nd, Disney cried as Nutcracker and the Four Realms came out to the lowest Rotten Tomato score of the year at a staggering 34%.
Yikes.
Anybody see that? I feel like that was people also like did. A thing. Like, did anybody see it?
It wasn't a big financial break. It did not do well. It kind of in any terms.
I'll watch it on Netflix maybe one time.
The Flixen?
I do want to see it at one point.
We got to talk about Bandersnatch one of these days. Has nothing to do with this show, but it's an interesting concept.
Oh, yeah, I saw there.
In November 21st of the same month. Wait a minute, what? Later that month, on the 21st, Ralph Breaks the Internet came out.
He broke you.
And that did actually quite well with audiences and critics. And finally, December 19th, the most recent release was Mary Poppins Returns, which has, come out to some... I think that the thing you're hearing the most in the negative sense on Mary Poppins Returns is that it is Mary Poppins with different songs, which is not... It's not inaccurate. That's the same plot.
Eh.
I mean, it's exactly the same plot. Every movie kind of has, like, yes, this is the Chim Chim Marie song. This is the Stay Awake song. Like, you can do that for the whole movie. It's slavish to a degree. And I agree. But I'll also say, like, if you didn't know the original so well, I think you would say the movie is really damn good. I guess it's a really good skeleton to slide into. I loved it, personally.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like when somebody, like, says something like, oh, you look like this celebrity. It's like, oh, well, but that's a compliment. Well, most of the time, anyway.
Well, I don't have their money, though.
Well, yeah, I know. Mary Poppins Return does, but...
Mary Poppins
but see, you look that money. Good without the money. That's really exactly. What you should be focusing
oh,
on.
Oh, all right. All right.
It means okay. something.
All right, I'll go with that. So a fair amount of releases this year. And on our next show, just so you know, we're going to go and preview all the films of 2019, which is another big slate of movies coming out.
Mm-hmm.
Almost all of them of which is a sequel,
mm-hmm.
Which is, I don't know, that's not great. Mm-mm. Not great, because at least this year, while we had a lot of sequels and this and that, we did have some quote-unquote original stuff. Actually, not that much. It's a very small amount of you know... I always find it weird. I mean, Black Panther is an original story, but it was a character that was introduced in a previous film. So it's hard for me not to think of that as just like, it's a Marvel movie, even though... It's not like it's not Black Panther 2 or something like that. Like, it's the first one, but I view it as it's part of that universe. It's another chapter in that universe. Therefore, it's a semi sequel.
Yeah, I guess.
You know?
I don't know if I'd call it a sequel.
Well, that's the thing. It's not, but it's just part of that anthology.
Yeah, but it can be watched by itself, and I think you'd still be okay with, like, you don't have to know, like, who this character, like, was like, oh, this guy showed up here, blah blah blah, kind of thing. So, like,
yeah,
I know
for the
what
most
you're saying,
part,
but
they
yeah.
hint at like Claw, you know, like Claw was really introduced somewhere else, but I don't really think that matters. Oh, I guess only really the post credit scene would be like, what the hell is that?
Yeah,
like, you know, who's this random honky living in the middle of nowhere with
oh,
one
yeah.
arm?
I
like,
forgot what the post credit scene.
Yeah,
was for
like that would really probably be like the only part where it's like, wait, what the hell is this?
Oh,
yes.
Should we just mention, like, obviously we're going to talk about our favorite movies, so spoilers, because we're going to talk about why we liked them.
Yeah, that's a good call. Yeah, spoilers.
Just in
everyone.
Case you haven't seen
spoilers,
anything
spoilers.
This year, it's been a full year, but we'll probably mention. I mean, I don't know if we'll get into big major spoilers for everything, but just we'll talk about the story. Whatever.
Mary Poppins kills everyone in the twat the
what?
Excuse what? Me, sir.
The twat twist of the year. It's staying in.
You got dyslexic with your letters there.
Yeah, I did that last week, too. I think I said whore or... instead of
yeah,
Thor
yeah,
Hulk, I said, like,
yeah, you,
whore and Thulk.
Yeah.
It's good stuff. It's the best road movie they've never made. All right, so let's get into our top three. So who wants to go first? Raise a hand. Oh, my God. It's like kindergarten. All right, Miss Van Rens, I'm going to pick on you.
Okay.
What do you have? You're number three.
Okay, we're going 3-1.
Yeah, all right. Why not?
So oh, yeah, don't order these?
No, don't worry about it.
Okay.
I mean, I'm ordering mine because that's how my brain works because I'm a crazy person. My number three is Infinity War. I would say that because it's the culmination of everything we've been looking at with Thanos. You know, we actually kind of get some real Thanos in this movie. Mm-hmm. And I would put this higher on the list just for the scene when Thor shows up in Wakanda. Like, that's maybe one of my favorite scenes in all of the MCU. Mm-hmm. I literally screamed in the theater.
Best moment.
Because, you know, Thor. so it could go higher. Yes, Jeff, definitely. I could put it higher on the list for that. Also, Jeff Goldblum, for obvious mm-hmm. reasons. No, I don't know that needs to be said again, but I'm going to say it because Jeff Goldblum.
He wasn't in this one, though.
Yeah.
No, he wasn't. You're right. See, look, my brain automatically, like, I just include him in everything in my brain because he's always there.
It would have been better if he was in it.
It would have been better. Why wasn't he? He should have just shown up. Yeah, so Infinity War is my number three. I don't have a ton to say about it other than, you know, we've all talked about the negative stuff in regards to the, you know, the dusting and the reversal of the dusting, and we kind of all know that that's going to go that way. So I think that's why it's lower on my list, even though we don't really know the resolution. It could go higher, and I think that we've talked about that too. It could move higher on my overall list once we see how it turns out in the long run. But yeah.
Do you think that's a negative for it, that, like, you need the second part of it in order to figure out how much you like it or not? Like,
I do think it's a negative, and that's why it's so low on my list. Yeah. And I mean, number three is not low out of all the movies that, you know, came out this year.
Yeah.
But it would be higher if I do end up liking the resolution. Yeah, I think that's a negative.
So actually, I have Infinity War at the same spot in my lineup. It's in number three, and I had a real struggle between this and Incredibles.
Yeah, that is weird.
To make the bottom of my list, again, the bottom being three.
Yeah.
But out of, what, 10 movies or however many movies came out?
Was it 10?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Yeah, it's 10. So, Incredibles, as much as I enjoyed it, it is so similar, again, in structure to the first one, where, you know, if it sticks out for me for Mary Poppins and it sticks out for Incredibles, both films that I enjoyed regardless. Incredibles also probably has the best scene, one of the best scenes of the year with the raccoon fight with Jack. It's just, that's the highlight of the movie. But Mrs. Incredible's storyline is just so close to what Bob does in the first movie.
Yeah.
But Bob's side of the story is really good, the parenting side. So I'm starting to wonder if the parenting side of those movies is more exciting than a 5 to 10 minute chase sequence.
Probably.
Which the movie has in very quick succession in Incredibles 2.
I think it's because, like, you know, we know superhero films. Like, we know what a chase scene is. Like, we know, like, you know, good guy, bad guy, like that kind of stuff. But, like, to go behind the scenes of, like, kids with powers growing up, how does this parent handle it? You know, like, it can be funny, it can be, you know, drama, it can be more. And, like, I think that just, it's such a different, you know, element to superhero films that I think, like, that's why it's more interesting.
Yeah, I would go with that. I'd also say that one of my favorite films of the year is Mission Impossible, though. And that has a lot of chase sequences, but I am eyes glued to the television or screen, whatever you're watching it on, during all those sequences. So there's some great parts in the chase sequences of Incredibles. But anyways.
But is it also with Mission Impossible, just to get sidetracked a little bit more here? Because, like, also, like, you know, like, what's his name? Tom Cruise, like, actually was doing some of those stunts. So now you're just watching it, like, to watch him, like, jump from building to building and be like, oh my gosh, he actually did that.
That,
like,
that is definitely part of it. I watch this and I wonder how no one died.
Yeah.
Especially after I learned that Tom Cruise learned how to fly a helicopter. I didn't know he was actually flying the helicopter at the end of that movie. That was one thing I stupidly assumed was some effects. And then I was watching the behind the scenes stuff. And how about that? Why not? He just learned how to fly a helicopter. But Avengers does make the cut, despite, you know, my little pokes and prods at it for stuff that I didn't think was very necessary. Like, we get it. Peter Parker watches, sci-fi films and then doesn't know the titles of them, you know.
He's like me with actors. That guy.
He's like all of us with something.
Yes.
Yeah, I guess. They just feel the need to bring it up in every film so far. So, that aside, and an Avengers movie without really many of the Avengers having that big of an impact outside of Tony, and Spider-Man, I guess, since he is christened into the Avengers pack in the movie, which is played to a very big moment, which it should be.
Great.
Thanos was phenomenal. The way that they finally got to utilize him after him just being, you know, sitting on a throne or finally getting up out of said throne. I loved the visual, just bombastic of the whole film was insane. He throws a moon at Iron Man. I mean, he throws a moon at him. It's great. It's really
great. I'd throw a moon at you if I could.
What's up?
I'd throw a moon at you if I could.
Oh, God. I would totally live from it, too. And then try to murder you. So, but again, yeah, this is a sequel that, I don't know, I feel like a lot hangs on what they do with the finale, even though, like, you know, I've seen a ton of trilogies or, you know, two-part films, however you want to say this is part of. And I don't feel that way towards them. Like, the Return of the King has no effect on the Two Towers for me. Like, that's not a thing. Return of the Jedi doesn't affect Empire for me. But for whatever reason, the way that they played off how much this movie, like, is impactful at the end, if you reverse all of it and none of it matters, it does kind of affect future viewings. But that's just me. Ryan, what do you have for your number three?
So I'm going to caveat this by saying the margin between, like, what was two and number seven on my list was razor thin. But it's, for me, it was Ant-Man and the Wasp. And we talked about this when we reviewed it the first time. Seeing a character with a disability who's trying to overcome it, who's being basically, like, torn apart and put back together for somebody with an autoimmune disease, which I have rheumatoid arthritis, like, that's a really powerful thing to see that kind of depiction on screen. Plus the fact that I love the Ant-Man movies. Like, they're very funny. They're very witty. Yes. They went from a heist movie to more of a traditional superhero movie, but there's, you know, you have your anti-hero, your hero, your villain, who's very human. There's a lot to it that I liked and that took a step away from the traditional Marvel fare. So for that, it made my cut.
I like it. I like this year in movies, like, for my list also, like, it was very personal. Like, a lot of stuff, you know, when I saw certain movies, like, I had, like, big reactions to some of them, and, like, those are the ones that stuck with me. And, like, they're still, like, good movies, but it might not be, like, you know, oh, the visuals were amazing or, like, whatever. But, like, yeah, it's, like, that attachment that you make to the movie. And I like how both Ant-Man's, like you said, were, you know, they're superhero films, but they're, like, standalones, and, like, you know, you get more humor from them than I think most other ones. Save maybe more on parallel with Thor Ragnarok, because that was pretty good, too.
Ryan, with two Ant-Man films now done, and you would assume a third one will happen eventually, what do you want out of that third film? Because does the visual gag of Ant-Man start to kind of lose its interest a little bit? Like, they made something big, or they made something small. But I felt that joke still worked, and it was still visually appealing in the second film. But what do you want in the third one? It's, I guess, specifically, do you want Ant-Man and the Wasp Part 2? Or do you want Ant-Man 3? Because I don't think that you can involve her in the film without her being part of the title card, because that's how it should be. But do you want just him again, or do you want the duo on screen again?
No, I think the chemistry between the duo works really, really well. I would like to see, you know, I think they're going to branch it out a bit further. I don't know how much legs the Ant-Man has left, really. I know there's a lot that you could do with the daughter that happens in the comics when you get later. But I don't know. I don't know what's left in the tank really there, unless you're going to explore some of Michelle Pfeiffer's powers and go down that road. If we're going to, you know, what, a team Ant-Man movie? Is that what we're headed to, where you have Michelle Pfeiffer, you have Ant-Man, you have Wasp, you have Ghost, who's kind of playing around in the background now? You know, I don't know what that looks like, but there's interesting angles they could take on it.
Yeah, because I was just looking, like, does Ant-Man have a lot of other, like
villains?
Yeah.
Himself. That's the thing. Like, that's always been one of the big things about Ant-Man, was really his own issues, and I don't really think they're going to introduce that stuff. I think it's pretty clear we're not going to get introduced to that stuff in this film.
No, they gave you as much of, you know, a lot of that's Hank Pym.
And
they gave you as much of that as I think they're going to give you, and they're not going to go too far down that rabbit hole.
So I could see a Trinity. I hate saying that word and making you think of the Blade movie, because it's not good. But if Ghost comes in as, like you, as you were saying, like as a character in the background, and then moving a little more to the forefront, a Ant-Man Wasp, you know, with the Ghost.
I'd love to see Team Ant-Man. I would love to see Michelle Pfeiffer and Michael Douglas. Like, I think I'd
be okay with that. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that making that more of a what's the word I'm looking for? I can't think of the word. Making it more of a group effort that might be a fun way to go. I could see that really being fun.
We need a good pun on, like, a colony of ants in the title. And...
Well, I mean, I know Courtney was about to bust with how many legs does Ant-Man have left.
Yeah.
So.
I realized what I had said. And I was like, I'm just going to keep talking and not look at the screen for a moment.
Ant-Man 3, Ant Farm.
Oh, sure. Yeah, sure. Melissa, what's your number three?
All right. So I really didn't think about order, but just kind of quickly doing it.
Yeah.
I would probably put Black Panther my number three, because while I had a good reaction to it, it was the other films, I think, got more of a reaction out of me. But I wrote about three films this year on the page, and this was one of them. I think I wrote about it at least once, maybe twice. I don't remember. But I also kind of pulled that as, like, the influence for my list, because I was like, okay, well, if it touched me deep enough for me to write about it, that means that it stayed with me and it, you know, should obviously be in my list. So yeah, for me, it was Black Panther. Mm-hmm. I loved the character, all the characters. I love the ensemble that we got, even though, you know, you got a lot of T'Challa, you got a lot of his other, you know, partners, really, you know, I wouldn't even say that they were background characters, with Okoye and I'm blanking on the Shuri. Other ones. Shuri, but who's the other one that I'm thinking of?
I don't know, Killmonger?
Who's Lupita Nyong'o's, what was her name?
I'd have to bring it up.
Yeah, I don't remember her name. Yeah. It threw me. But having all the strong female characters in that movie, and, you know, while some of the CGI stuff wasn't great, you know, some of the visuals weren't, I guess, what you would expect maybe.
The end fight, that's the only one I would say before.
Yeah, when they're both in the Black Panther suit and it looks like a bad video game kind of going on. But overall, I really, you know, enjoyed the movie, and I enjoyed the story that they told. So
Nakia,
yeah.
So yeah, to have all of them, and to have the girl, you know, the girls in the forefront with the main superhero, you know, and to have, like, a villain that was so good, and, like, to have the villain, like, where we kind of understood, you know, what he was doing, and, you know, it was hard to say, like, no, he's just wrong, like. You know,
his end game is wrong, but his reasoning is not.
Yeah, so it's kind of like you could understand him a little bit. And it was just like, it was one of the first movies, the first, like, superhero movie where I was kind of like, you know, all right, I can think a little bit more here than just have silly fun. And I appreciated that. So a
couple of months later, I'd be agreeing with the villain again. So.
Exactly. And I think that that's great that, like, we got that, like, first, you know, especially in the Black Panther film. And I just appreciated what it did, you know, overall for women, for, you know, black people to have like this superhero right in front of them. Like, it was really cool.
Oh man, there's another movie I want to talk about, but we'll talk about it later.
I'm going to put it in there anyway. I'm going to talk about it at some point.
Okay, good. Yeah. I actually think that we have to. Have to. All right. So Black Panther coming on the first on Melissa's list. Well, for the first that she's named, the first of their name on Melissa's list. Courtney, number two.
Well, this is perfect because my number two is Black Panther, so we can just keep chatting about that.
Cool.
Melissa said most of what I wanted to say about the movie. The cast is really, really phenomenal in this movie. Representation of women and people of color, obviously huge and important. Another aspect that we didn't talk about is the soundtrack. Mm. I mean, you have two soundtracks for this movie, mm-hmm. and they're both really excellent. And one of them brought like several songs from the soundtrack into popular music too, which that doesn't happen too much anymore, where you get a movie song that is played on the radio and is like a number one hit.
Yeah.
So I think that's a big plus for Black Panther as well. I still love that movie. Yeah. We watched it again. I'm still dancing in my seat at home on the sofa, watching that movie. It's just really, really excellent. So yeah, I was like Black Panther Infinity War, but I think Black Panther takes it for me for number two.
You know what's funny is that you say the inaccurately about the thing with the song from the movie became popular, and that doesn't happen very often. Mm-hmm. It used to.
It doesn't anymore.
That was like a staple. Was you know that the big pop song, the radio hit from the movie, or you know, that was a commonality, and I've never even thought of that, but it doesn't seem to happen as much anymore.
Isn't like that why we used to get a lot of like, especially with the Disney animated, we'd get like the pop singers who would sing like the main song.
Yeah, because that would get radio play because they're not going to play the version from the movie.
Yeah, but like Courtney said, like nowadays, like you don't get that as much. Also, I really wouldn't know because I don't listen to the radio, so. But
yeah, I mean, like we had My Heart Will Go On from Titanic, but that's been, a ton of years.
I think it was Linkin Park and all the Transformers movies that killed the trend. I'm just going to blame it there.
Man.
You're not wrong.
Man.
I like that you went with Titanic because in my head it was Christina Aguilera's version of Reflection like kept going through my head.
Yeah.
It was not the hit they wanted it to be.
I know. And it was such a good A movie B song.
What a random thing. But yeah, of all the ones that didn't hit.
Yeah.
It was that one. Ryan.
Yes.
Are there more movies on that list of yours?
There is. So at number two, we talked about it a bit already, but for mine was The Incredibles 2. And part of this was the nostalgia of waiting 15 years for this movie. Mm. It's one of those rare sequels that picks up right where the previous one left off. But you still feel like they did it. You know, not much has changed. Like they got the tone right, keeping it going forward, which that's a credit to Brad Bird and finding the right story. Mm. It does have those things where you know, Mrs. Incredible's journey feels very much like Mr. Incredible's journey. But you're right. I think the dad side of this is where it becomes really interesting in the fact that, you know, we don't necessarily focus on that side of things. You know, Mrs. Incredible in the first one had that on lockdown. She has the kids on lockdown. Like, she knows how it works. And, like, he's having to learn something here again. It, you know, part of it is the same lesson he's already learned. Like, don't neglect your family. Like, there are things here. But that raccoon fight, the pieces with Edna, it was just a fun, like, whodunit kind of a thing. You know, if you don't know who the villain is, I don't know, 20 minutes into this movie, you're not paying attention. But
yeah. Yeah.
Whoops.
But it's great to watch them play the who's done it kind of in the background with Mrs. Incredible and then the kids later. Seeing real adolescence problems with having superpowers on Violet's side. There's just a lot of layers to this movie that they all work really, really well.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you think about the first Incredibles, the kids really don't become prominent until the last third of the film, the third act. And in this, I feel like actually Dash, he has some of the best lines.
Yeah,
he's actually the bulk of the comedy relief from the family. It's Dash, and I thought that was great to see because that just fits. You know, that should be that character who gets to say all the weird you know, rando stuff.
I mean, he is legit the Flash, who is always, especially in, like, the animated Superman stuff, like, he's always quippy. Like, so, like, to have a speedster be quippy, it's kind of like, okay.
He's also just really honest, and, like, when he sees something, he doesn't have much of a filter.
Yeah, because he's, what, like, 7 or something? Yeah,
so I really enjoy Dash a lot in this one.
Shoveling food in his mouth and then quoting with the, is she having the adolescence? It's just, that's perfect preteen boy.
Yeah.
You know what I also thought? I think a standout scene, you know, I was saying before how there's a couple of very, very lengthy action sequences. But, man, visually, that fight that occurs in the, I don't even know how to describe it, like that flashing room, you know, with the strobe.
The fake screen slavers.
Yeah. That is visually, I mean, obviously, if you are sensitive to that kind of stuff, it is a part of the movie that you probably don't watch. But if you don't have photosensitivity, that is one hell of an alarming visual scene. I think it's really impressive.
Yeah.
I was actually surprised there wasn't a note on the front end of that movie, like, beware, if you know, it's just not there, which I thought it would have been.
Yeah. It seems a pretty obvious one that you would put up there. Another really nice positive for Incredibles 2 is, again, as Ryan was saying, 15 years later, in this, maybe this is more of a reflection on Incredibles. Yes, you can look at those two films and you know the technology, the leap in 15 years, specifically how empty in many ways the city feels in Incredibles 1, and in this one it is like fully bustling city. It feels like that. But man, that first movie holds up real well. You know?
It's just the textures that are like the most noticeable, especially their suits. But like, it's not like a knock on the old
one.
They
stayed absolutely true to the vibe and the tone and the color of that first one. And you can watch them back to back. And I don't think that there's any real hitch for the viewer, you know, from just a tonal visual standpoint. I think that's really great.
Yeah. I think it's interesting, like, we always talk about how there were sequels and everything like that, and especially in the animated realm, like, we got two sequels this year, but both of them were a good distance between, like, even Ralph was 6 years, like, and that's a decent chunk of time. It's not 15 years by any means, but still, like, I kind of like it because, you know, sometimes we're used to animated sequels being, like, just a couple years later, like, you know, boom, let's get another one out, you know, another Secret Life of Pets.
Yeah,
but you know, I kind of like that they're, even though they're sequels, they're
trailer. It's like, hey, you guys, hey, have you seen these jokes a million times already? Here they are again. Cats, right? They don't let you sleep. How crazy is this? Oh my God, shut up.
But they don't let you sleep.
Sucks. That studio is just like the most, that studio is the friend who puts up the meme that was funny 15 years ago. That's what Illumination is right now with me. And I want them to be better than that, but that's what they are. It's like, hey, guys, dogs, right? Crazy. Do you have anything interesting to say new? No. Just like, they're so wacky, and cats are rude, right? Oh, man.
Ugh. Ugh. What was your number two?
Me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
My number two... I'm not even going to bother talking about it now because I haven't heard it invoked yet. So I'm going to just wait because I'm sure that three other people are going to probably have it in the slot that they haven't spoken about yet.
Surprise, surprise.
So number two for me is Mary Poppins. And Mary Poppins Returns, to be more just accurate. There's a ton I could say about it. I've done a review on it on the show of... It is structurally the same movie as the original, and I can see why that has made a lot of people sit in there and be like, well, why'd you just make another one of these? Totally valid. Totally valid. I don't agree with it, but it's a valid complaint. The music is really good. There's a scene I would take out. I would take out Turning Turtle. And it's funny because it's for the same reasons that I guess you should say that I Love to Laugh shouldn't be in Mary Poppins, the original. But I just like that other song more. And it's really what it came down to. Like, there's one song I think is a lot of fun to go through, and the other one, the scene feels a little long. And it's based upon, they actually make it a plot point. Like, we gotta get this bowl fixed. And then it's like, you really don't. And it makes sense, though, like, within the story that they're telling. But we're brought to a location to basically be told, you didn't really have to come here. Which, anyways, outside of that, though, I think Ben Whishaw steals the movie in so many scenes.
Yeah.
But if you never, a friend of mine said this to me, and they actually didn't like the movie overall. But they said, if you never saw the original, Emily Blunt is Mary Poppins.
Yeah.
And I could not be more in line with that opinion. If you'd never saw the original, she would be the prototype. Now, obviously, she is taking cues from the Julie Andrews performance, of course. Mm-hmm. I also think that they are letting her take a tiny couple of steps forward in the way that they cheat with the camera, where you can see Mary's reaction when no one else sees Mary's reaction.
Yeah.
And I actually think that's one of the most important things for me in this film, is at the end of the original Mary Poppins, you are given a roadmap pretty much that she does really care about these kids, maybe a little more than the other times that she's done this, mm-hmm. because the talking umbrella calls her out on it.
Yeah.
And in this film, we're able to see a lot more of her reactions when no one else is looking at her. And it does show that she has a genuine care, and she also enjoys what she's doing. Like there's a semblance of joy in her trying to mend these problems that she, you know, that she sees. And I think that just makes the character a lot more interesting. It gives it a little extra layer, and I really appreciate that as a watcher.
Yeah.
So
on that note, like her joy and stuff. Yeah. D flat major. In the first movie, Mary's goal was to kind of, you know, tone down the children's like craziness, but more so like help their relationship with their very strict father, and to kind of show the father, you know, to not be so rigid and, you know, force his children to grow up, because they'll only be children for a limited time, and you should take joy in their, you know, innocence. And, you know, she was trying to bring laughter in, but in that very stoic way, because the father was so stoic. In this movie, she kind of already has laid that foundation. Like, this is supposed to be a house full of joy and laughter. And then she comes and it's not. And the kids have already grown up so much because of their situation. So she's not only trying to help the father with his stuff, but she's also helping the kids, like, relearn how to be kids. So I appreciate the fact that you get to see her joy so much, because, like, that's what she's doing. She's trying to bring joy back to the entire household. So, like, her enjoyment and her focus on joy, I think, was really a great counterbalance to, you know, the very heaviness that's in this family, for a good reason, but, you know. I appreciated that kind of juxtaposition.
There are follow-ups I want to do on that, but I'm going to wait until I am making a massive assumption here, but until this movie comes up again later in, what, 13 seconds, possibly, because I just realized the next person I'm going to go to, and I'm going to ask Courtney what... Oh, no, you, Melissa.
Hi.
Hey! What's the other of your three? What's one other of your three?
Actually, Mary Poppins is up there, so we'll keep it going. I have to put Mary at number two, because there is one that got a bigger reaction from me this year, but Mary Poppins is up there. I actually won't go see my number one movie again yet, because it impacted me so much the first time. Okay. So, and I've seen Mary Poppins now twice. So we can stick with Mary Poppins. I know Courtney and me have talked about the music a ton. So if you want to kind of continue on that road, I'm more than happy to go with it.
I hate to kind of like do this to you, but Ryan and Courtney, you're both number ones are coming up, correct?
Yes.
Yep.
Is this the movie?
Yes.
Yep.
Have at it, you three.
Yeah, I mean, Courtney, you and I know, like, during when we were at Destination D and we got to hear the soundtrack, and like the composer would tell us, like, oh, you know, I really liked this part of the original. Like, he was a big part, like, fanatic of the original. So he would, like, you know, tell us, oh, I like to put this little piece from the original into the regular one. And then you and I were talking about how not only in the regular songs, but in the score itself, like, how he's hidden so much from the original in his new score. It was kind of breathtaking how he did it.
Right. Yeah. I counted 11 on my first listen through, 11 quotations from the original. Most of them are in the instrumental score. There are a few in the songs, but most of them are in the instrumental score. I really want to do a score study on both. I want the full scores for both movies so I can look at it, because I'm sure there are inversions of themes and retrograde themes, you know, things that are backwards and upside down that are actual themes from the original movie. I'm sure it's everywhere. And I do, at somewhere, I have a list of songs from the original that I've heard and songs from the original that are missing. But I am very certain that they're all in there in one way or another. I just can't say enough about the score. I cannot say enough about the score. These songs are just as memorable as the original songs are. I get the issue that everybody has with Turning Turtle, and I think that has more to do with the use of Meryl Streep. And I guess the wasting of Meryl Streep in this movie.
Yeah.
There's no resolution to that. Melissa and I have talked about that, too. They never go back to get the bowl, so who cares?
Yeah, and like also...
Just really quick, because I know that me and Melissa, we talked about that when we first viewed it. They actually do give you a resolution in the scene, but this is what the resolution is, and I don't think it's a great one. She takes the bowl... You know, they're like, oh, you know, value. It doesn't have any value, you know, but emotional one, blah, blah, blah. Come back in 2 weeks and it'll be fixed.
Yeah, like the next.
That's actually what she says. Come back in 2 weeks and it will be fixed.
Yeah.
So.
Well, yeah, I mean, I heard that. But
yeah, but like, and again, like I'm agreeing with you.
Yeah.
But in like in heavy quotes, that's the solution. That's the conclusion to the bowl thing. And that. Why she doesn't show up and jump on a balloon at the end of the movie, I'm right. going to chalk that up to schedules, just filming schedules. But like from a, you know, again, the loosest form of this plot line kind of just hangs there. Quote unquote, they do close it in the movie. Just to have that out there.
It's not just that I agree with it. Weird because like in the first one, it's like, yes, if you want to parallel them, this is the I love to laugh portion. But out of that I love to laugh, you get the joke, you know, that Mr. Banks tells to the bank and, you know, kind of like realizes like, oh, you know, sometimes you just need to laugh or, you know, and he like learns his lesson via that. And he has the joke that he tells. And like, it's a good callback to something that might have seemed so unnecessary, you know, but then it actually helps Mr. Banks realize, you know, what he should realize. In here, like, we get the lesson from Topsy that, you know, you if you just change your perspective, you'll see, like, you know, you have what you needed right in front of you kind of thing. But like,
and if you missed it by any chance, the kid repeats it.
Yes.
Like,
and it
on
is
his
repeated.
Way out of the door.
And Ben Wishaw repeats it, like he's like, oh, I just had everything in front of me. Like he repeats it when they're in the bank talking, you know, when he's at the end. And it's like it's repeated, but it's not that impactful moment that that joke had in the first one that it makes the scene feel wasted, because like, you know, you don't feel like I love to laugh is wasted because of the lesson that comes out of it. This one, like, I don't know, maybe they just didn't deliver the lesson well enough, like in that way the delivery was not like a good way to do it, so it just kind of, yeah, it makes that scene feel really like,
well, like it curtails into the kids figuring out that Colin Firth is up to nefarious deeds, which, look guys, if Colin Firth is a banker in a suit, he probably is up to some nefarious shit. That's just, you should just know that going in.
It's the pocket Brian, watch.
I was gonna say, I want to note that when Colin Firth showed up, the first words that came to my mind for anyone who knows Love Actually was, "We hate Uncle Jamie." But you know, there's a lot of, for all the similarities between the first one, there are several things of note to talk about that are different. You have. One, you have real danger in the chalk drawing, or the in this time the porcelain bowl with the
character sequence.
Yeah, there's an action sequence with the children without Mary. Mary is nowhere to be seen in that scene, so they're on their own, and they have this, you know, action sequence with these truly bad people. There's a dangerous element to it. We have a romance between Jack and
Jane.
Thank you.
Jack and Jane. I never put that together. Wow.
Yeah, Jack and Jane was. I think my brain wasn't going to put that together. But between that, that's underplayed substantially. But there's enough there to keep, you know, to kind of keep the wheels turning. I didn't know that BMX bikes came to London so early in the 20th century. But
okay, but if I may, Ryan, I want to ask you about this. So I read one of my favorite writers is it's a Chicago Michael Phillips for the Chicago Tribune, and he really didn't like that. And
that's exactly what I said to you when we left the first, like, the pre-screening. Yeah. I'm like, people are going to have a thing with that.
But his reasoning, which I always usually agree with, I thought was kind of funny, and it made me think. He wrote down, he's like, you know, the original film didn't have to have hula hoops to you know, just try to attract the most recent trend. And my brain said, is that a recent trend right now? Like, is BMX biking?
No.
Like, 10 years ago, I guess it would have been when, like, the X Games was a big thing for me. But, like, I don't really think that it's a trend right now. It's just goddamn strange.
It is strange. But if you look at – if you can go back, you know, 50-plus years now to the original Mary Poppins, in the 1900s, they didn't have – choreographed aerial dancing going on either on rooftop, you know, it's like the guys who are like balancing on between the two different roofs and doing all that stuff. It's the same kind of thing. You know, you suspend the disbelief for 5 minutes and you enjoy the sequence for what it is.
I think though that the introduction of the BMX bikes leads to the only unbelievable piece of magic in that in regards to Mary Poppins in the movie, which is when they're filming her on the bike, and it's very clear that it's not Emily Blunt on that bike. Yeah. Everything else that they show her do, I can totally buy into it. But when they have the splits with her feet on the bike and then it's just the top of her, like, that was very obviously not her.
And also that shot is a callback to the first one.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
You know, so maybe that's sometimes where the nostalgia can nip you a little bit.
So speaking of callbacks, I just want to see if anybody else, because this is just a thought I've had watching it and thinking about the music. We all know that Julie Andrews was not coming back because she said she wanted to give Emily Blunt her space. She didn't want to be like, here's the original Mary Poppins. But does anyone not think that the Angela Lansbury, the balloon lady role, wasn't written for her originally?
It feels like it.
Yeah, it does. That's what I thought so too. I just want to make sure that I was on.
Saying it was written for Angela or for...
No, for Julie Andrews.
Okay, so I think the intention was to give her that role, but that music was absolutely written for Angela Lansbury, not for Julie Andrews.
Yes,
they have very different voices. So I think once they realized that Angela Lansbury was going to do it rather than Julie Andrews, the piece was written with her voice in mind rather than Julie's.
And the original Jane is in that film also. She asks where number 19?
Yeah.
That's
a different kind of movie, I would say.
I'm actually glad Julie Andrews didn't show up. Like,
I think it's a great choice.
Yeah, like, I'm glad that she declined. Yeah. Like, I actually am kind of disappointed that they, like, axed her because, like, and maybe it was just a courtesy.
I think you have to. If Dick Van Dyke is in the movie and you've asked him, you'd better ask Julie Andrews.
Okay, but on the caveat of that, because, like, my mom asked me, like, oh, well, you know, Dick Van Dyke is in it, so why isn't Julie Andrews? Like, you're supposed to believe...
she hates the movie.
No, that Julie... that Mary Poppins is the same, like, throughout. So this is technically supposed to be that same character, because Dick Van Dyke is his same character as the original, like, ish.
Not by definition.
Well, but you know what I mean. Like, he still plays...
It's in the Hereditary line.
Yeah. So it's like...
All right, so how about this? Let me pitch you a scene. At the end of the... All right, so, like, the kids are not happy. Ben Whishaw's, like, crying. Oh, no, I'm crying. And so Mary Poppins...
Turned into Ringo for a second.
Yeah, hey, you know what? Mary Poppins is like, I'm failing, and she goes to the roof. And then out of the clouds, Julie Andrews' face comes out, and she's like, remember! And then... Like, does that work?
No, she needs a deeper.
Yeah, better?
I did think we would get the reflection, and I told Courtney this when we watched it. When she's looking at that balloon,
I thought so.
I was like, don't do it. Because they would have had to have done a lift from the original movie. You couldn't have done Julia and Jews. Now, I think, please don't do it. And I was so happy when they didn't.
Yeah, that was...
I would have been pissed.
That would have been weird. That would have been so weird.
Yeah.
Like, all this... silly dumb shit like, is she a Doctor Who? Or is she a doctor? Because it's not really a doctor, whatever, who cares? all that would have been like just flooding for the rest of eternity.
Yeah, no, just I like the fact that like they're just, you know, she doesn't look exactly the same, but yeah, like this is the same Mary, and like the kids recognize her immediately. Everybody knows it. Like, I just like that. Just, I'm glad that they didn't have Julie Andrews in it. And I love Angela Lansbury.
Yes, Courtney.
I have to say one more thing that I know Melissa and I have talked about.
Red rum.
For everyone listening, I'm making red rum letters. So Melissa and I have talked about this, speaking more to the believability of Emily Blunt as Mary Poppins. Mark Shaiman killed it with this because Emily Blunt is a completely different voice from Julie Andrews. Mm. Julie Andrews is far and away a better singer, a higher voice, definitely a soprano. Emily Blunt is a mezzo for real. Like, she has a low voice. So the way this was written was brilliant, because unless you had a discerning ear, were a musician, whatever, in theater, whatever the case may be, you wouldn't know how different they are.
Yeah.
Based on the way this was written for Emily Blunt. She's totally believable as Mary Poppins, even though it's a totally different voice.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. And like, also, we haven't even talked about Lin-Manuel Miranda. Like, I just think that part is like craziness, okay. Because like, when like he was cast, like everybody was like, oh my gosh, it's Lin. And like, there's so much other good stuff in the film right now that like he becomes like a, not a secondary part, but almost. And I think that that's actually great, because while he is good, I am appreciative that they let everybody else shine as well. What?
Say it.
I mean, all he's asked to do is smile the whole time. I think it's a smart move.
Yeah.
That role doesn't really have much going on in terms of range, and I think that's smart. But I am very curious going forward if that changes. Now, obviously, he can do range emotionally in a show, because Hamilton has that range, especially when you get towards the end and whatnot. But he really just had to smile a lot in this one.
But that was also kind of...
No, it's like, not a negative. I'm just saying, like, it's fine. Like, it's not like Dick Van Dyke was going through, you know, emotional stigmata through the original Mary Poppins. Like, it's not... This isn't that movie. I don't come here for that.
Yeah. I think it's great that they used him that way to kind of just, like...
Thank God he didn't, they didn't write him in a way that would overshadow Blunt. Because, there is some movie news. You're paying The Rock $13 million more dollars than Emily Blunt in the Jungle Book movie?
That's ridiculous.
No.
Yep, that is official and that is out there now. It broke yesterday. He got paid $13 million more. Emily Blunt was in two of the highest grossing films of the year this year. With Quiet People Place. Dying Fast and
Why
and
are Mary we still Poppins. Doing this? Why is this still
Especially
happening?
Especially for The Rock. I'm sorry, but the man doesn't make good movies.
No. Emotional range of a teaspoon.
Yeah, which is fine, because that's what Schwarzenegger had, but he made better movies.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry to bring that up. I read it last night and I was like, you've got to be kidding me. Red Rum Fingers?
Ridiculous. Yeah, Red Rum Fingers. I got another thing to say. So going back to Lin, a controversial statement, Lin definitely outsang Dick Van Dyke in this movie, as opposed to the first. He outsang him by about a mile.
Yeah.
Lovely London Sky was...
Oh my gosh.
Like, I could die every time I hear it.
Yeah.
And that unexpected super high falsetto at the end of that is maybe the most like tender and like it's musicianship on a super high level. By the way, everyone, the screen that I'm looking at is just exploded with people with crazy arms.
You're bringing the points up.
To throw mine in.
So anyway, Lin definitely outsang Dick Van Dyke. Very few people can outdance that man, and Lin did not do that at all. But,
okay, that's where I wanted to curtail into. Another conversation that I had, actually same person, one of their big critiques was they dumbed down the dancing for Emily Blunt. And my initial reaction was, well, they did the same thing in the first one. But how did you feel? How did everyone feel about the choreography? I don't think it's La La Land simplified. Because, I mean, like, I love La La Land, but that's obviously, you know, not exactly Ginger Rogers type steps that they're making, you know, people do in that movie. But how did you feel about the choreography in Poppins? Do you feel that it's whatever? I guess people are calling it simplified.
I just feel like they, in the other one, like all they had was the chimney sweeps with their sweeps. Like,
but that's a hell of a sequence.
No, I know. But like what I'm saying is in this one, like they used more of the props. So like while the choreograph might have been simplified, like I feel like they used the props really well. But also like I just didn't feel like if you did a very highly choreographed section with just dancing, if it would have been okay.
Let me rephrase the question, because we can use La La Land in this as a thing. And Ryan, yes, murder fingers, Ryan.
No, I'll get that. You can compare the two. You know, it's a little bit different when you have chimney sweeps with one piece that they have in their hands versus lamp poles that you got to dance around. Like that's a different setup. But you look at how they use the props, like Melissa was saying, in A Book Is Not the Cover, or Cover Is Not the Book, and the way that's done, it feels very reminiscent of the old vaudeville. Mm. It feels very reminiscent of how you would have used the scene and used what your surroundings to make that work. So I think in that respect, it's not taking into account what the overarching goal was of the scene, as opposed to, oh, the dance sets were simplified. Right. But the choreography is still not it's still a step up from, if we want to use La La Land, a step up from that.
So, okay, so then going in that, I know this is kind of like going into a different conversation, but I'm really curious. Is a Singing in the Rain possible? Like that level of choreography?
Yeah, but they don't cast people like that anymore.
They don't, yeah, that's the thing. Like, so my question sticks.
Yeah, no.
Is that movie ever going to happen again?
No.
Is a movie like that ever going to happen again?
Because back then, like, if you were an actor, like, you had to act, you had to sing, you had to dance. Like, you had to
dance!
Yeah, you had to do all those things, because really that was what the movie was. It was all of those elements. Now, you don't have to be a singer to be in a movie. Like, you have plenty of movies without songs. You know, you have plenty of movies, obviously, without dancing. So, like, you go to the movies for other stuff now, so actors aren't trained those ways. So, I don't think... Because also now you get actresses who are really good who maybe can't sing, but then are cast in roles that need singing. So it's like, you know, how do you do this?
Okay, well, wait.
You'll get those movies necessarily, maybe again.
It wasn't like there wasn't any like serious dramatic films in the 50s. There were a million of them. But like
I was thinking 30s, but okay, yeah, no.
When they did musicals, they cast actors, singers, and dancers. Yeah. They cast the triple threat. Now... When they do a movie like this, cast names with secondary skills in dancing, singing, whatever. And it's the name that's most important.
That's the distinction, Melissa, I just wanted to make was, like, throughout film history, there's always been massive dramatic films, but there was a section of people who made the musicals.
I just meant, like...
And we don't have that anymore. Like, actors
necessarily aren't, like... If you want to be an actor nowadays, you don't necessarily say, okay, but I have to make sure that I have an ear for music or I know my range or whatever, and or I can tap dance. Like back then, I feel like that was more of an emphasis, like make sure you know how to dance, because if you maybe want to do more than just, you know, the one role or just want to do this one type of movie, like you need to be trained in all these. And like now you don't. You can be in comedy, drama, whatever, whatever. And then like Courtney was saying, the name... is what draws people to the movie. So you want the name versus the talent sometimes, or, you know, the talent might, you know, be secondary to the name.
I disagree with that. Like you thinking that the 30s was like, you have to sing and dance to have an acting career, but that's fine.
I think that was,
I understand. I completely understand what you're saying. And yeah, there's like that subset, like doesn't exist anymore. Yeah. It's weird. It's really weird.
I think there was a time when that was the expectation, though, was that like part of your, if you were going to be in Hollywood, part of what you were trained to do was singing, acting, and dancing. Like all of those were a piece of it. And I don't know, like when you go to acting school now, you don't have to do those things. There are electives you can choose to do, but it's not, and I'm sure you're still encouraged to do those things. But I think I get what Melissa's saying in that, like, back in the day, like those were the things that were expected that everyone would be able to do and take classes in or whatever the case may be.
So, but with this film, it had no negative on you though. You know, for you watching the choreography, you didn't.
Honestly, no. Cause like Ryan was saying, like they danced around the light poles. Like that was more of like a pretty like visual, like than, you know, like I like the silhouetted chimney sweeps, but The light poles were really cool. Like, what they did with the ladders was kind of interesting. The bike stuff was whatever. But, like, it wasn't, like...
The bike stuff is whatever. It's
it wasn't in there long enough for me to be like, this is a terrible piece. But, like, it was just... It was an odd choice, in my opinion.
So, Mary Poppins.
Mary Poppins.
Are we done?
Yeah.
Mary Poppins.
Yeah.
Mary Poppins.
Because, you know, that maybe was the thing from the original. We didn't have to carry over so much.
What?
Terrible English accents.
Oh.
You know, I could have maybe... fine. I cannot wait to watch this movie on 4K in my house.
I've just been listening to the soundtrack on loop for weeks. So... Weeks mm-hmm. and weeks and weeks.
Melissa...
Courtney's made me listen to one song on repeat, because she's going to make me do it tomorrow night. So.
Oh yeah, it's going to happen.
What's going on?
Oh, Ryan's going to rap tomorrow.
Nice.
What?
We're hanging out on New Year's Eve. Ryan's going to rap.
He's doing the bit?
Yeah.
The Dirty Rascal?
I am.
Yeah, he's going to do it.
Nice.
I want video proof. There's better be video of that. Or I'm
going to text Aileen.
It's insane. I want video of this.
I gotta practice today and tomorrow because I haven't been practicing enough.
I like how you looked at your hand like there was a watch on it.
I would use my watch.
She's looking at her glasses. She's looking at the glasses on her.
Yeah, that tattoo's great.
It's
like
a great
that.
Tattoo. Yeah.
I love that.
Can I just say, actually, one other thing going on that rap that I wanted to talk about before?
You mean the patter? Patter?
Yeah. The patter. So when we were at Destination D, Mark Shaman actually performed that section, and he definitely...
Is older man than Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Yes, but he built it up like, okay, like, this is really intense, blah, blah, blah. And, like, when he did it, it was very... It showed, like, that he's not trained to do that. Like... I'll just say it that way. He was out of breath, and I'm sure Ryan can reenact it.
I was going to say, it's going to show tomorrow night. I'm not built to do that, but I'm going to do it anyway.
So, like, I'll be honest, the first time I saw the movie, when Lin did that, and it was, like,
so easy for him.
I was like, but wait, I thought this was supposed to be, like, fast and crazy and everything. Like, I was actually kind of disappointed, because I was like, wait, what? Like, I thought this was, like, a really crazy thing. But watching it the second time and listening to the soundtrack, it is a very fast. No,
he
like,
goes for a long stretch.
He does.
While moving.
Yes.
That's really the thing, is like to sit and do it is A. To do it while moving and walking and exerting extra energy and extra oxygen into your physical movements. And the fact that he doesn't flinch, he makes it look so damn easy. He almost makes it too easy. Like, it looks too easy.
That's why, after watching it the first time, I was disappointed. Because I was like that was so easy. What did we just watch this guy die on stage for?
Like, I legitimately think it's akin to watching Gretzky on the ice when you watch him and you're like, he's not doing anything crazy. He's just always in the right place. Like, he just knows where to go. But he's not, like, an incredible stick handler or whatever. Like, he just knew where to go, and he made the game look so dumb easy. It made me think of that, where during that I was like, oh yeah, the old, you know, the anyone else who isn't, you know, built for this would look like Shaman did at the end and like fall on the ground and have the whole like great comedic thing to it. But then you see him do it and you're like, well, shit, I guess I could just kind of, I could work this out maybe, you know?
Yeah.
It was
that was great. One of the funniest moments after leaving the first viewing, to be like, well, that wasn't that impressive. I thought it was going to be crazy.
The key is breath. Yeah. I mean, he knows where to breathe.
Yeah.
If you know you have 68 bars of rapping coming up, I mean, you have to have your breaths the same every single time. And he knows how to do that because he wrote Hamilton.
Yeah. And that's like, the thing. Well, like,
even you know, all of his previous. Yeah.
Right.
So as I say, I'm so excited for Mary Poppins on 4K in the house. Mm. I hope they release it in 4K because, Melissa, you got one more movie on your list.
I do.
And to the most aggravating garbage of the whole year, it is not available in 4K. Every other movie Disney's put out is available. I have no idea what the thinking behind this is. But, Melissa, you have one more movie on your list.
I do. And this is the one that touched me the most. And, stop. But I think that this was the one that this has been the one that I want to watch again. I'm glad it hasn't been out on 4K because then it means I can't watch it again.
Nutcracker.
Nutcracker. Uh-huh. No, it's Christopher Robin. This was the one where I was a mess in the theater. I cried. I laughed. I could not get away from how adorable they made this animated character. And I know it was about Christopher Robin, and I appreciated how they let you have that kind of counterbalance to Christopher Robin's, like, heavy story and just this adorable little teddy bear being too freaking cute for words. Like, there's images from that movie that stick with me, you know, just his sticky paw prints on the floor and the honey, like, his the whole sequence with the balloon. Like, there's just so much that's just still sharp in my mind, even though it was, what, like, 4 or almost 5 months ago now.
It's been 84 years since Titanic.
So yeah, this one definitely had a big emotional impact on me, and it had to be my number one. Like, while I love Mary Poppins, and I did get teary during Mary Poppins, like, I just straight up cried during Christopher Robin. Like, there was no denying that. So there's a lot in there. That was another one that I wrote about for the site. I went more in depth with that there. And then, yeah, that was one that stuck with me the most.
Well, I mean, I don't want to, like, I'm not trying to, like, you know, put onions under your eyes, but what was it about the story itself that got you so emotionally?
It was Christopher Robin's story. It was this whole, you know, feeling like you've lost everything in life, lost the joy, don't know how to get it back, you know, especially during the summer at that point. Like, it was a rough patch for me just emotionally. Yeah. So, like, having that come out and having that, you know, and I've always been, like, a big Winnie the Pooh fan ever since I was little. So, like, I've grown up on, like, that whole, the characters, and, like, they, you know, you see this character that you grew up with who was always, like, you know, just a part of joy. You know, Christopher Robin never had anything bad to say or do. Like, and it was never, like, you know, a heavy cartoon. It was always, like, just a fun thing. But, like, to then see this character, like, in real life, like, this is what can happen to somebody who, you know, was once very, you know, happy and carefree, and now life just weighs on them. Like, so, like, all of those themes, you know, and then just how Pooh Bear brings that joy back into his life, makes him realize what he has and how to be happy. Like, all of that, learning that, you know, it was really, like, a parallel to my journey. So it was very emotionally impactful.
Does anyone, what did you guys, do you guys also enjoy the Robin? I feel like we all enjoyed Christopher Robin when we talked about it a while, you know, many months ago. That movie feels like it came out a year ago also, and it was not very long ago.
It does. There were a lot of Disney movies that just ripped my heart out this year. I mean, there really were. Like, you know, we've talked about Ant-Man and the Wasp, but that really made me emotional. Christopher Robin was up there, and so was Mary Poppins. I haven't watched Christopher Robin. I've watched it twice. I don't know when I can watch it again, because it does the same thing. It rips at my heart. It tugs at my heart. Watching, you know, someone who was filled with so much joy as a child to then be just bogged down by the world and not understand where they live, you know, where that joy lives anymore. To see that Eeyore is the first person who really recognizes Christopher Robin again when he starts playing again, when he starts pretending again. To see that, and they got such a wonderful, you know, actor Ian McGregor to play Christopher Robin. Like, he just, like, if you even watch, like, the screen test of him when they were shooting his costume, when they gave him the stuffed Pooh Bear, and the way he started acting with it, it's just, it's all there on, you know, on from minute one. You know, and Mark Gatiss is Mark Gatiss.
He's so Mark Gatiss, right?
He's so Mark Gatiss. This is exactly what you expect.
I want a shirt that says, "That's so Mark Gatiss."
it's a wonderful movie, and it nips at all the right heartstrings.
Yeah, I
agree with that totally, and I think, like, that's kind of the trend between all of our number ones. Is, you know, Mary Poppins was very similar in that way. I think Mary Poppins hit harder with me there because I just have a really personal connection with that. Like, Mary Poppins is one of my very favorites of all time, and that the original makes me just, like, I'm in pieces. So seeing that continue and then getting that story of watching Michael fall into the same trap that his dad fell into in a different way. Mm-hmm. And them full on addressing, like, death, the death of a parent. And then, like, seeing that, having Mary Poppins address that through another, like, just unforgettable song. all of our number ones are emotional in that way and deal with like really heavy stuff. And Christopher Robin, you know, it's just the same. I loved it too. And I love that it was so meaningful to you, Melissa. I mean, that's huge for me as your friend. I am happy that that movie came out this year.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Still want that stuffed bear.
Get
it.
I'm waiting.
It's been sold out forever.
No. We're not getting that one.
Oh, no. I know which one you're talking
about. You know which one I'm getting.
What is it? Hot Toys?
Yeah. It's Sideshow is going to be putting it out.
Oh.
It's supposed to be sometime this year. Or at least the pre-order will be sometime this year and it will come out 2020.
He just has a little honey pot.
Yeah, he does.
It's a freaking joke.
my number one was Panther. Just to.
Oh, I thought it was
Avengers and Mary Poppins, and then actually Black Panther is my number one. It has grown since the initial, because I have, again, that's another movie that I don't think all the action sequences are great, and it is an action film. I think that the car chase is by far the best one, and it really probably shouldn't be. In the structure of that film and how it works. Actually, that entire sequence that leads up to it, that whole casino thing, might be the action highlight. It is the action highlight of that whole film. But the highlight of that film is the chemistry between the cast. It is Michael B. Jordan owning the screen as Killmonger. It is just a fresh intro for a needed cog in all of it, in the whole Marvel, in the whole superhero universe. My friend Mike was as emotionally moved by this movie as like you were for Christopher Robin.
Yeah.
But in very different ways.
Yeah.
You know?
It's all about the representation, yeah.
Yeah, as a black man, like seeing a cat who looks like you.
A cat. I got it.
Yeah, I got you. Who looks like you up on the screen. In, you know, in the way and in the glory that movie is shot.
And then for it's have it to be thing. So successful, like, you know, like...
Massively successful.
Like, they've done, you know...
Again, the highest rated movie on the list that Star Wars, that Disney put out this year.
Yeah, because they've done, like, black superheroes or black comic book...
They have, like,
but
Blade.
It's like,
you could say Blade hasn't been like
this has been.
No,
so, like,
it hasn't
I
been
think
of this quality, you know, not by any chance. Yeah. I don't think many comic book films have been of this quality.
Yeah.
Making your villain matter is so hard. Man, it's so damn difficult. But they really knock that out of the park in 100 different ways.
Yeah.
For the people who are like, it's Lion King. Hey, man, Lion King is Hamlet. So I don't know. I guess Lion King sucks too then. So, which it doesn't. Just that thought is always funny to me when I hear that. It also brought in it extended the visual flavor of the Marvel Universe, which I've been on record of saying it was getting real stale for a while. And we've had a nice slew of films, you know, from Guardians to even the original Guardians, I would say was one of the rare ones that broke that very toned down, dried out color look that the Marvel films are having. And this was one that really, really kind of exploded up onto the screen. It's just gotten better as I've gotten away from it because other stuff has come out. Mm. And then I look at Black Panther and I'm like, Jesus Christ, they did that movie so well.
Yeah.
So it's actually getting better by comparison. So it raised the bar. And I feel like ever since then, the bar hasn't gone up yet. Mm. It stayed where Panther is at. It stayed where Panther put it.
Yeah.
I find that a bit of a bummer that Infinity War didn't up that bar. Part of it does. Part of it doesn't. Again, we talked about that. But it's just a groundswell. Black Panther was a groundswell of the year, in my opinion, for cinema this year.
Yeah.
It was the thing that you will be talked about next year.
Yeah.
And wow, when that movie gets its sequel.
It's going
to
be great.
Man. The build-up to that film is going to be massive.
Yeah.
And I hope they release it the same exact time of year.
Yeah.
I don't want them to change that one bit. So that is my number one. I know that we were talking about so many other things for so lengthy. I don't want to go into it too deep. But Black Panther was my number one. And for it to top Poppins, which I really was blown away, I think it just shows how good and... Black Panther is going to be a good movie in 20 years.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is not the same for a movie that I was really hot about this year Ralph Breaks the Internet. Unfortunately, I think there are lots of parts of that story, even though the core of that movie, like the lesson it's trying to teach, is, you know, forever. It is wrapped around a bunch of crap that will not make sense to future generations if we're good people at all.
Yeah, hopefully.
We will have moved on from that. It's also vastly missing like a King Candy or Felix and Jane Lynch's character.
Yeah.
It doesn't have a good enough supporting cast the way the first movie had, because as much as I love Ralph and Vanellope, that first movie gels so incredibly well because of the entire world and all the other characters, and it is cleverly hysterical. The second one has like bigger belly laughs, but it just doesn't seem as on par with the humor of the first one.
Yeah, it's definitely a different humor. And yeah, like the fact that it's wrapped up in the internet and internet culture right now.
Yeah.
We'll have to see like in a year or two and then, you know, longer, how well that holds up.
And it doesn't take the feet to the coals like it should. And part of me really believes it's because Disney makes so much off of people working free for them on the social media. They don't want to point out how absolutely disgusting social media is. So they have one minor scene that puts the light on it, and then they shuffle that away into the back of the film that is wrapped around the internet.
Yeah.
And insecurity and stuff like that.
And maybe if like we were away from that culture, like they would feel more comfortable putting it on blast. Yeah, but they don't put it appropriately on blast.
I can never say I have no idea what the original pitch was for this movie. But if the original pitch for this movie was like, hey, man, we're going into the internet and we're not going to have anything to say about it except for a 3-minute scene.
Yeah, I'm sure there was
a surprising pitch. So whatever. I want to just touch on some of the other movies of the year. Solo is a blast. It's not fantastic. Like, it has some parts. I think it should be 15 minutes shorter. But that movie's a blast.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
It is definitely the movie that I look back on and I'm like, man, it just got done wrong with the way it was, in the way that it was released. It, after following all the nonsense that went on in the production of that film, keeping it in May made it feel rushed. You know, like, yo, they just put this thing together to get it out. It should have been December from the beginning. I really wish it was. The only other one that we really didn't talk about was Nutcracker and the Four Realms. And I'm going to be straight honest with everybody. I did not watch it.
Nope.
Because it looked like another one of those, another Alice in Wonderland CGI fest where the doughy, you know, the strong young lady is surrounded by CGI.
Right.
And, they, you know, like, it's not really about her. It's more about everything going on around her. And it didn't capture my interest at all. I will watch it eventually just so I, you know, can make my own thing on it. But It's actually the only one out of this year I did not see. I think Wrinkle in Time got more damage than it needed, but I don't think it's great. Again, the boy in that movie is so dumbly useless.
Calvin,
that's not even real words.
He was just as useless in the book. You know, unfortunately, I think it suffered from the source material, and they didn't go far enough from the source material that they needed to. Like, they diverged a bit, but I think they could have diverged a bit more and maybe helped that film, because the casting was great. You know, like, obviously the lead actress was great. Chris Pine was great. Like, they had really good things to work with. I even enjoyed, Mrs. What's It and Mrs. Witch. The visuals were phenomenal, but it just suffered from, I think, sticking a little too closely to the source material, which Courtney and I read, and it's a very odd book. And I'm trying to read through the next one in that series. I think it's A Swiftly Tilting Planet, or A Wind Under the Door. Actually, I don't remember, but it's still like, her writing is not great. So I think that they just stuck a little too closely to the source material to make it an easily accessible film.
Okay. Now,
but I also wonder if, and I know we'll get more to this next week. I wonder if this is just currently Disney's live action producing from literary works. I'm curious to see how, if they learned any lessons that will carry into Artemis Fowl. next year.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so I'm reading Artemis Fowl now because I want to see if they're doing this, if they do the same thing that they did with A Wrinkle in Time.
Okay, so now do you recommend, how far are you into it? Like, do you recommend reading it prior?
I need a real trailer that's going to show me something. I'm not very far into it. I think I'm in the first quarter still.
Okay.
But I am curious. You know, I do like to kind of have the, if it is based on something, I like to go back and read it first before. So I am curious to see how they're going to play that, because it is a series of books. I think it's like 8 books. So they're clearly trying to plan some longevity with this. I don't think this is Disney's answer to Harry Potter, but I could see that the leaning of that way.
They've been trying though, because they tried with Chronicles of Narnia, and that fell terribly flat.
Yeah.
But like, I didn't read Ready Player One, and I'm glad I didn't, because of like the mystery, you know, the puzzle solving with that. So like, I didn't want the movie to be ruined for that. But like, I didn't mind reading A Wrinkle in Time first. So I'm wondering. I don't know what Artemis Fowl is.
I want you to read Ready Player One because
it diverges. And
also because the part where The Shining is in the movie, they use a different movie in the book. And I don't think it's a movie you know. And well, so I'd be curious if, like, you read that section and you're like, what the hell is this?
I'm glad I didn't read it before. So I'll go back and read it. Yeah. But, like, I'm wondering, like, if I should read Artemis Fowl before the movie, or if there's, like, that thing where, like...
God, I feel like that never helps.
I don't know.
I feel like it puts it up against a wall that's so hard to climb sometimes.
I guess I have to read, like, the back
cover. But Ryan doesn't seem, like, overly enthused about it yet. So I don't know. Maybe it is.
I'm not over enthused about Disney's hailing of something. So I'm like, well, there was enough here. Because I liked A Wrinkle in Time, the book, when I was a kid. I haven't read it in 20 years.
You should.
So it's probably very different. Yeah, I was gonna say it's probably very different to me now. But so I'm wondering if are they just diverging? Or are they staying so close that it hampers the film? So I'm kind of wanting to see if we're in that trend. So I want to go see. I want to read Artemis just to see when it comes out what they've done to it.
Okay, so there's one more thing I want to talk about before we go.
Okay.
There have been obviously there's a lot of good Disney movies this year. But there was a movie with a character that Disney owns in some aspects, and they had a film come out this year. I got to talk about it, I think, 2 weeks ago a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But Ryan.
Yes.
Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Such a great... I need to go back and watch Spider-Man 2 because I need to figure out where this is in my ranking, but it's either one or it's 1A at this point. Like, it's a phenomenal Spider-Man story.
Yeah.
Which one was Spider-Man 2?
With Doc Ock.
Okay. I'll have to watch it again because I don't remember really that much either.
If this was under the umbrella of Disney, if this was had to be factored into this year, this is number one.
Yes.
This is number one. This was one of the best movies I saw all year. And yeah, I have to watch Spidey 2 over because it's been a while since I revisited it. But it's this or that for the best Spidey film ever. It makes Homecoming look like plain ass toast.
Mm.
Because this movie is willing to take chances visually with everything that it throws at the viewer. Like, they just... Look, the people who made it know these characters, obviously, right?
Mm-hmm.
They also know that the audience, that they need to engage in order to have a financial success. They have no idea who some of these people are. Like, no one knows who the hell Spider-Ham is. Most of them have no idea who Spider-Gwen is. Like, that's not a thing in the vocabulary, you know? But they had the belief in it. That they didn't shy away from it. It reminded me of when Disney did Guardians.
Mm.
When it's this cast of characters that no one knows about. You know, even if you don't like read Marvel comics, you know who Iron Man and Thor are, like, to a degree. Like, visually, you're like the hammer guy. You know, you're like, you understand those things. But with Guardians, you know, when that came out, it was like talking tree. What the hell? What is this nonsense? And it was, that's why it was so good, because they were like, no. We are going to introduce these characters, and it's for your benefit. Like, trust us. Come along.
Yeah.
And we're not going to shy away from doing exactly what these characters do. And the confidence that this movie has, and it's so damn good.
Courtney, did you see it?
I haven't seen it yet, no. Jim really wants to, so we'll go.
Yeah. We saw it actually on Christmas, and I really enjoyed it. I knew who, like, Spider-Gwen was. I didn't know about Spider-Ham, but I liked the character. But I liked the overall. I hope it wins Best Animated.
I'd be shocked if it doesn't.
I will never watch the Oscars again because it is such bullshit if it doesn't.
Well, I know sometimes they have a lot of stuff that goes on during the Oscars, so I'm wondering how they'll play this. But yeah, if they don't, it's just clear that the whole thing is just a mess.
Well, you have, and you know, to speak to, go back to where Courtney was talking about with Black Panther and the album, there's music on this album that's now making the rounds on radio. It's crossed over because it has that vibe to it. It has, you know, like specifically What's Up Danger is just phenomenal.
And Sunflower, right? Isn't that the other one?
And Sunflower, that's the other one. Yeah, that's been carrying out. But to give all these characters their space, you know, you have what, five or six spider people at throughout this movie, to give them each their space, to not be afraid to mock the fact that origin stories are, you know, the thing that we always see. It's like, all right, let's do this just one more time. to have a villain who's, you know, you're going to see, this is an animated film, I'm going to kill characters on screen. It does not matter to me. To play all those characters, to have them have a real reason for being there, to have real emotional connection to one another. Like, it's not something you typically see in a animated superhero film, and it's just phenomenally done from beginning to the very end of the post credit scene.
This feels like what some of those like DC like directed, you know, DVD movies, like, no, that were really good, like that one Green Lantern one you showed me, or like what was the other
I think that was, I know which one you're and talking like about. The one that Darwin Cook originally wrote.
Yeah, and like there was a couple Superman, they're Justice good. League ones. They're good. But I'm saying
All-Star,
like,
Superman, I think, is actually phenomenal. But yeah, they're good.
But they're always like directed to DVD and stuff. And like, yeah. So like, and to they have look this. It
sometimes. The frame rate is not as, the frames per second is not as high as you'd want.
So like for this one to like actually get its, you know, proper funding to get like this really cool animated, you know, look to be a December release and be really, you know, phenomenal where it is. I really think it's a high bar for any other superhero or animated film. Sorry. It's a high bar for both because, you know, we've also gotten, I feel like, into a very, a lot of animated films haven't done the like a different look in a while. Like they've all like, you know, DreamWorks always has a look. Pixar has this look now, you know.
Disney's princess look is
all the same. You know, their animated films, while, you know, Ralph looks like not necessarily a normal looking character, the tone and color palette of that film is very, you know, the same as Frozen almost. You know, it's this very bright, vibrant colors. So like to have like this unique animated look to everything, I really hope that more animated studios say, okay, let's start letting our artists mess around a little bit more, because you know the artists are fully capable of doing stuff. You know that their sketchbooks are full of crazy drawings. It almost feels like how like when Inside Out, like all the characters were different shapes and everything. Like it's still a bright, vibrant color palette, but like they let, you know, different shapes of characters be there. Like now, like let's keep going with that. Let's keep making, you know, interesting-looking things.
There's a ton of great voice work in this movie, but I just want to point out one in particular. Wilson Fisk is now a character that everyone knows, which, if I said that 4 years ago, it's like just the craziest thing to say out loud. But Wilson Fisk is now a character everyone knows. For Liev Schreiber to come in, do nothing, as the Daredevil show has done before, has done, you know, and now everyone is familiar with, and make it his own, is just shows how damn good he is. And just to have like a story to go along with that, when I saw Glengarry Glen Ross on Broadway, he played Ricky Roma, who in the film version is Al Pacino. So that is hard to step into. But when Liev Schreiber took the stage, he had a completely different accent and delivery than he normally speaks with. He went like total Chicago accent. He had a different take on every line of delivery. And while I kind of like Ricky Roma in the movie version, I thought he was an absolute scumbag in the Broadway play for all the right reasons. And it was one of the most like striking examples of how acting can change a role. And Shriver does it here again. And I just think he's like an unsung hero. He just doesn't get the attention that he should, but I'm also kind of happy he doesn't, because he gets to do stuff like this and, you know, just sneak in and out of roles. But Shameik Moore's Miles is just, man, just go see Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Yeah.
Just go.
I'm gonna say, you know, because it's been a lot of talk about Stan Lee this week because it's been his birthday. This is arguably, it may be his best cameo that he's had in anything. It's really high up there, if not, but it's really a powerful scene to watch.
I swear I'm not trying to shit on the Marvel cameos, but wasn't it great to see Stan Lee not play like the stupid old man? Like, yes. He wasn't a punchline.
Yes.
And look, timing be timing, but what a sequence of dialogue to have.
Agreed.
What a crazy sequence of dialogue to have. And, you know, last year it was the Luke Leia scene where, yeah, in hindsight, you're like, Jesus. Like, who would have known? You know, how you, yeah, could have never known, like, that this is the most incredible, you know, series of dialogue. That Stan Lee bit in Spider-Verse is insane.
Yes.
So, all right.
Yeah, I want to watch it again because I know there's stuff in there that I missed. And
once it's out and we have it,
oh, I'm sure it'll be
on heavy rotation. You can just randomly just walk into a room, and I'm guaranteeing you it's going to probably be on a lot. Guys, 2018 was a hell of a year. There was a lot of movies that came out. A lot of ones that had a very big personal impact on many of you, many of us. And I hope you enjoyed the films of 2018. But, yo, guess what happens? Well, I'm assuming we make it to then. 2019 is going to happen, according to the calendar. And more movies are coming out.
Hooray.
Crazy. Crazy.
So what a world
we're in. Yeah, in 2 weeks, we're going to be back. And we are going to be doing our big preview of 2019, one of my favorite episodes of the year to do. I really love the blind happiness that we have going into and what we think could be.
Because I think we were all really high on Wreck-It Ralph last year.
Yeah, and I still enjoyed Wreck-It Ralph a lot, but right, then like
everything else,
and
came
I
out.
Enjoyed watching it, and I enjoyed the time sitting in it, and we talked about it afterwards. But like the further I get away from it, I'm like, I'll just watch the first one. Because the first one was actually on recently when we were in Hilton Head.
Yeah, yeah.
And 10 minutes of watching it, I was like, damn, this movie has so much personality. And then it clicked. I was like, oh, yeah, it kind of isn't there as much in the other one. So anyways, though, yeah, we're going to, you know, the unscathed beauty that is the 2019 landscape. We're going to go into that in a couple of weeks.
There's so much.
There is. And we're going to go into every one of them, and we're going to give you, you know, which ones are our most anticipated. I'm looking forward to it. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in this week. And we will see you in a couple of weeks. And until then, say goodnight, Melissa.
Goodnight, Melissa.
Say goodnight, Ryan.
Goodnight, Ryan.
Say goodnight, Courtney.
Goodnight, Courtney.
Goodnight, Pete. Happy New Year, everyone. We'll see you in a few.